Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology Innovations at the Brookings Institution. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO today. We'll be talking about cybersecurity in a recent report D'Souza authored, which looked at how federal agencies incorporated cybersecurity into their strategic plans. Kevin, you wrote a blog post for the Brookings Institution that I thought was fascinating, looking at the vast majority of government lacks clear cybersecurity plans. Talk a little bit about what came from that research you did and what stands out to you as the most significant or surprising finding.
The major issue that we uncovered was even though the threats of attacks to critical infrastructure are at an all-time high, most of the agencies lack clear plans on how to invest into capabilities to actually deal with these threats. And also in the agencies where they had clear plans or clear actions, there were no real performance evaluation metrics to actually uncover if these investments being made are actually going to pay off. The other thing that we found that was rather critical was, with the exception of the Department of Energy and the Department of Defense, where you have traditional large critical infrastructure programs, the rest of the agencies pretty much ignored this issue altogether. And so if you were going to cause harm to the U.S., there are plenty of agencies whose data you can easily compromise given that they don't recognize this as a strategic priority.
You talked about critical infrastructure. How would you define that? Because a lot of times when we talk cyber and we talk critical infrastructure, you think of the water or the electricity grid or the financial system or the telecom system. Did you define it that way or did you define it differently?
We pretty much defined it exactly as you were outlining, though we also added the information infrastructure. And so all of the hardware, software, and all of the protocols and processes required to actually move information across our environments was also a critical element. So yes, you do have to account for things like electricity and water, but you also have to account for the information infrastructure.
You know, just to play devil's advocate for a second, an agency would say to you, well, we don't own our infrastructure. We rent it like you do for your house, or you don't own the Verizon, the AT&T, the Sprint, the CenturyLink connection. So it's up to them to protect it, not really me. How did you incorporate the fact that I think it's something like 80-85% of all critical infrastructure is owned by private sector?
Right. I think that's an important point that you make. But while a large percentage of the critical infrastructure is not owned by the public sector, the private sector has an economic or an incentive from the market to actually protect its infrastructure. And as a result, the private sector invests a huge amount of resources to actually protect its information, its data, and everything else that goes along with their infrastructure. However, the critical issue is, regardless of the amount of effort the private enterprise invests, if the weak link is that 12% or the 18% that is owned by the public, that weak link can be used as an entry point to exploit things further down due to the interconnected nature of the infrastructure. The other thing is that the public sector has a role to play when it comes to establishing frameworks and governance protocols to actually get collaboration done among the various agencies and also between the agencies and the private sector.
It's interesting, you earlier on said incentives. The public sector has an incentive. There's an interesting blog post by Michael Daniel recently, the cyber coordinator at the White House, talking about what incentives they're going down. And one big one is going to be, they say, the federal procurement process. So if, again, use the example of telecommunications, if the government's buying from AT&T, buying from Verizon, CenturyLink, et cetera, they can put it in their procurement. Is that the other link that you're seeing, that if they're not seeing it as a strategic goal or strategic need, then they're not adding it back to their, for instance, their procurement documents and things like that?
Yes, absolutely. And so the huge incentive is obviously a lot of the major private organizations, and especially when you think about things like AT&T and others, they have large government contracts, and we have had challenges in how these contracts get evaluated and appropriated, and especially when it comes to information technology contracts, things are even more complicated, and we have seen this play out when you examine cases like the IRS Business Modernization Project, when you examine healthcare.gov, where there's a large amount of private contracting that happens around IT, though the public agencies lack the requisite knowledge to actually evaluate these contracts and especially to manage them from a long-term basis. The issue of protecting data is just one of these elements.
I definitely want to get into how you did the study, but before we do that, let me just follow up on one more thing you said about the Defense Department, the Energy Department, as two of the few agencies that actually performed well in your study. Talk about what did Energy and or Defense Department do? Why did they stand out to you?
The Department of Defense, and I'll just use them as an example, but it pretty much applies to the Department of Energy as well. So they are living in an environment where pretty much, I wouldn't say every hour, but it's on a pretty regular basis, they are under attack. There are individuals who have tried to break in and compromise these critical infrastructure and the assets that these agencies own. And so these agencies, for quite a few years, have established both teams to actually monitor their critical infrastructure. They have teams in place that can actually react to an intruder. They have programs in place to actually monitor an intruder when they enter their environment and trace their actual behaviors. And so these agencies not only react to the attacks, but they also take proactive measures. And so given that they have had a larger history of being the attention grabbers for individuals who want to do harm, I think they have a longer experience and they have pretty well-defined programs. They have dedicated teams and agencies in place. They have evaluation measures that they track on a regular basis, if not a daily basis. And so this is why these two departments, just as examples, were ahead of the curve compared to a lot of the rest.
In many ways, it makes sense why Energy and DoD would lead the pack when you look at this from a critical infrastructure protection standpoint. DoD runs a lot of their bases depend on that. Energy, that's their goal, Department of Energy. Were there any other agencies, small or large, that you looked at that stood out to you as being at least going down the right path or at least doing well?
There were elements in other agencies that we were impressed with. So just as an example, if you look at Treasury, they have a pretty extensive program in place when it comes to how do they monitor criminal activity that happens on online networks and the movement of money across these networks to actually conduct illicit activities. And so they had that element of their program that was pretty good. However, we did not think that their program was extremely advanced because they viewed that as an isolated branch within their agency. And as we looked at how well is this connected to an offensive program that may be run out of their IT department to actually learn from those experiences to protect their infrastructure, we didn't find a clear link. Now, again, we didn't go into extreme amount of detail, so that link may exist, but at least from our initial evaluation, we didn't see a link between an extremely good program that they could use to actually increase their learning with their IT. The other thing that we found is in a lot of the agencies where we thought they were not doing as well, the information assurance or the CIO role in general was quite a bit removed from the chief administrator. So we actually counted the number of layers between the chief information officer and the secretary of the agency or his or her chief of staff who was responsible for the general administration. And so it's not surprising that a few of the agencies where we found weak IT plans, one reason was that the CIOs were not, at least in our opinion, seen as clear contributors to the strategy and the direction of those agencies.
We have to take a break. My special guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at the Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Brookings Institution. Today, we're talking about research Mr. D'Souza is working on about how agencies incorporate cybersecurity into their strategic plans. I want to pick back up on what you said earlier regarding the link between CIOs and the chief administrative office, the COO, deputy secretary, whatever we want to call it. One of the big complaints that CIOs have had over the years is that, quote unquote, not having that seat at the table. The Federal Information Technology Reform Act, FITARA, which was passed in December, is trying to alleviate some of that, gives them some budget authority. When you looked at this linkage, how far down into the organization were CIOs? Was it just that they were reporting, let's say, to the CFO and not to that deputy secretary CEO position? What stood out to you?
It actually ranged quite a bit. And so I think the average is not as important as trying to understand why do you have those ranges, right? So if you look at agencies that are primarily in the business of dealing with the everyday public. And so if you think about agencies like the Department of Labor or Department of Education or even HUD, right? These are extremely different departments than when you look at departments like DOE, Department of Defense, that are more removed from the everyday public, or even DHS, for example. What you find is, depending on how IT is actually used by the agency to achieve its core objectives, the role of the CIO and the placement of the CIO changes. And so if you look at an agency like the Department of Interior, right, as we were examining their plans and everything, we find very little notes about IT. The only place that we were able to read about IT was in a few pages where they talked about IT modernizing the department. As we read that plan, we said, well, wait a second. If you go through every activity that was in that plan, from how to connect with teenagers or how to increase the amount of awareness of our national resources and things of that nature, IT has a role to play in all of those. However, it was never mentioned. IT was only seen as a way to modernize the office's backend. So naturally, in that agency, you do not find a very powerful chief information officer. Now, contrast that with an agency like the DOD or even DOE or even DHS for that matter, where you cannot have any aspect of that agency's operations, processes run without IT. And so in that that agency, as we read those plans, you see IT appear in just about everything. And so it's a matter of the posture of these agencies. It's also a matter of how is IT being used to drive at their core objectives, or is IT just to keep their facilities running?
That's a fascinating point, because I think when you look at IT, it's so marbled in everything you do. You can't do anything without IT nowadays. And I think you're right that when an agency recognizes that, all of a sudden that CIO becomes empowered because they realize the importance of that position, versus when they still see IT as, well, who's running my networks? Who got my email right? The old BlackBerry joke, do my BlackBerries work? Do you get a sense of is that just a leadership issue? And I know this maybe is a little outside your research, but or is that a culture issue of the agency? Or is it just, I hate to say it, maybe even an age issue? There's people who just haven't really come around to say, yeah, IT is really critical to everything we do from the top to the bottom.
It is a combination of all three of those, where you have had traditional agencies where their goal was to serve the public, and IT was viewed as an interference to that personal way of actually achieving their objectives. And so in those agencies, you have issues of culture. But I think one of the critical things we reflected on was, why are a few agencies so focused on IT, whereas others have completely abandoned it or ignored it? And what we have found, and we did a couple of interviews with chief information officers as we were doing this work. So if you take an agency where IT is actually helping that agency innovate and reduce or actually increase the efficiency of how their processes happen and actually deliver their services more effectively, IT by default is going to make things cheaper, right? And so when you go and you take a traditional process where previously you had to have 20 individuals do it, or it took 300 minutes, and now you have an IT-enabled process where it's being done in 3 minutes or something, no head of a unit or head of a team wants to say, okay, now I need a lower amount of money. And so IT is not always viewed as, hey, thank you for reducing my operational costs, because if you reduce my operational costs, that means, well, I cannot ask for the same amount of money going ahead. And so in agencies that have traditionally been very labor intensive, IT is, I think, purposely downplayed due to the fact that there can be a lot of efficiency gains.
I really want to ask which CIOs you spoke with. You probably won't tell me, but let me ask you this. When the ones that you did talk to, the ones that were in those agencies that maybe where IT was not held to the highest degree or not seen as a real benefit to the agency, do those CIOs recognize that? And did they respond with how they are trying to raise maybe the profile of the importance of technology? Because you would think by now, any leader would have to accept the fact that IT is so central.
That's an important question. And the one thing that came through in the few interviews that we did was everything is actually relative, right? So if while the few CIOs that we talked to, at least the group that were quite frustrated with where they were in terms of the organizational chart or how much influence did they have in terms of advancing strategy, they highlighted that, well, it is a lot better now than it was a year back or 3 years back. And so I think most CIOs are identifying critical ways to show the strategic contribution of IT. They are trying to find ways to help the agency increase their profile through IT. So just raising awareness. And so if you see a lot of the IT-led initiatives that have to do with social media, not a lot of them actually have to do with how the agencies transact operations. It's more about increasing the public perception of these agencies. And so CIOs are playing a critical role in that. The other thing CIOs are doing quite well right now is they have learned the art of collaboration across agencies. And so while maybe about 3 years back or so, had we done this research, my guess would have been we would hear a lot more gripes from CIOs. But now CIOs have identified ways to embed IT into everything that the agencies do and slowly learn how to be viable consulting partners inside their organizations.
I want to go back to the beginning of the conversation and talk a little bit about why you did the survey and how you did it. What attracted me to the blog that when I first read it on the Brookings Institution website is the fact that this was not just a regurgitation of GAO reports, which I appreciate as a reporter. Talk a little bit about how you went about it and why.
The idea came through a larger project that I'm involved in where we are interviewing CIOs across all layers of government to understand how are performance measures being applied to IT. And so as we completed about 12 interviews, my research team and I were reflecting on our key discoveries. And one of the things we found was that a lot of IT departments lacked strategic plans. And maybe they were not mandated to create ones because we were interviewing at more of the local level as we began the project. And so an idea came to us is to actually try to link up how is IT reflected in official plans, which is HR a requirement of all agencies. And so a few years back, every agency was asked to prepare a strategic plan. And so our goal was to actually go through those volumes of information, read them, try to categorize the nature of IT, where was IT being examined, what did the agency see as their priority as articulated in these official plans, and then try to link that to other things we found at the agencies. And so we did a lot of research through just reading plans and also trying to build links between the plans. We are now actually in the midst of trying to look at the recent budget requests of these agencies and trying to see how do the plans map up to the requests being made. Because in the private world, if you have a plan, then you resource to that plan. And so what we are trying to uncover is, given that agencies have had a plan, given that IT departments in most of these agencies have a plan, and so we extracted information from that, is there an actual alignment between these plans and the resources being committed to actually deal with it? And given that one of the number one pressing things is the protection of critical IT, the more an agency gets dependent on IT, we chose to focus on this article in terms of what are the programs in place to deal with threats that happen in the information sphere.
One of the things you read about is you scoured over 1,000 pages of federal agency strategic plans, determined which agencies invest most heavily in IT and cybersecurity. You looked at the Government Performance and Results Modernization Act, because that's where the agencies are told to develop their strategic plans. Give me a sense of, as you went through it, what were you looking for? Were you looking just for the term cybersecurity? Were you looking for how it was discussed within each of the goals?
Early on, we just did a basic word search because, I mean, to try to triage a large number of documents, we needed an approach. And so we basically searched these plans on a number of key technology issues. So things like Internet of Things, things like bring your own device, things like ERP systems or CRM. So we created a whole list of key terms that helped us extract out relevant portions from each of these plans. We then actually read the plans and tried to identify how was these issues framed. So just to give you an example, was there any mention of IT in the opening director's letter? I mean, there are plans where you see IT appear multiple times in the agency head's letter. There are others where there's none. So we not only looked at how was IT being articulated in these plans, but where was it, how embedded it was in the processes, and what were the goals and expectations that IT was going to do for the agency? Was it just to modernize operations? Was it to increase the amount of service delivery, things of that nature?
We have to take a break. My special guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at the Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Brookings Institution. Today, we're talking about research Mr. D'Souza is working on about how agencies incorporate cybersecurity into their strategic plans. In the last segment, you talked about how you did the research, looking at 1,000 pages of different documents. You did some interviews. Where is this going to be posted? What can people see the full research? What's your plans around that?
Over the next few weeks, so roughly till about the middle of March, our plan is to wrap up all of our interviews. And so we have quite a few interviews left that we would like to do. Then towards the end of March is where we are going to get into the actual report writing business. The plan right now is to have the report ready for anybody's use by about April, mid-April or so. I am quite confident that there will be another blog post on Brookings where the report is going to be made available. The other thing that we are trying to do is to use the power of information technologies to create interesting visualizations around the material that's in these reports. So think about a large-scale map of the U.S. where if you clicked a given state, or if you had a group of agencies and you clicked on it, it could highlight what are the key priority areas of IT, who's the CIO, things of that nature. And so we are trying to think about interesting visualizations. In addition, over the next few weeks, we are going to be writing about things like how are the Internet of Things or bring your own device to work captured in these plans, and how do we see the future of these technologies re-engaging the core objectives of these agencies. We have read quite a bit about cloud computing in each of these plans, but again, besides the argument that cloud computing is going to be cheaper and is going to be a little more nimble, how are agencies actually measuring their returns on cloud? And so that's another area where a group of us are pretty much doing a deep examination on. So that's the plan right now. The eventual report of the overall project on IT and performance measures will be released about June or so.
And you're doing this because, obviously, as a professor at Arizona State University, this is part of your research. Or are you doing this because Brookings contracted with you somehow? Give me a sense of what made you get on this path initially.
The initial money that was given for the research was part of a grant that I got from the IBM Center for the Business of Government. So that grant focused exclusively on how do we develop performance measures and the next generation of dashboards for a CIO to measure their IT department. So that was the money that kind of began the research, so to speak. I have not gotten any money from Brookings or have not been contracted by them to actually do this. They operate much like an academic institution where everybody's free to do the research that they want. I am personally interested in this issue because for about half a dozen years now, I have been examining the role of IT in large organizations. A lot of my work examined the private sector early on, but recently I have been looking at public agencies. So I have looked at how do these agencies innovate, how do they use IT, and so a lot of this is my own interest that's driving.
Okay, so you do all this research. It's fascinating. You come to some interesting conclusions. What can people take from it? You know, a lot of times, just putting the research out there, people may say, maybe we didn't go fine. We're not very good at this issue, or we have some challenges. Do you do recommendations, or is there something that you would say that they could take this and really make their cybersecurity, make their planning better?
The eventual report that comes out in June around performance measures, just to give you an example, is going to have a group of recommendations. And so my reports that I release at the end of a project have a whole group of recommendations. When we did the project about a year now back on large-scale data and public agencies, we created a group of recommendations that eventually got adopted by a number of chief information officers to drive how they built these programs. In the case that's about the blog post when it comes to cybersecurity, I think there's a lot that we are learning right now in terms of how leading agencies are actually dealing with the threat versus how is the threat manifesting itself across the various layers of government. And so what our hope is that these reports and the blogs that we write will drive a group of actionable recommendations in June. The real trick with cyber security from a recommendation point of view is there is very little to recommend that we already did not know, right? So just as an example, if an agency doesn't take that threat seriously, well, they are going to get compromised. If an agency doesn't have an information assurance officer or a team, chances are it is not a priority. And so while we have tried to think about innovative recommendations as we did the research that was highly specific to the blog post, we could not come across anything that was not already told to CIOs or agencies' head. One of the things that we do recommend is there needs to be a lot more information sharing that happens across these agencies. And so there's new efforts underway to make that a reality. And so I think as agencies have designated individuals whose job is to exchange information about threats, whose job is to learn about threats from the private sector, I think that may be helpful to advance our knowledge of this space.
We have to take a break. My special guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at the Arizona State University and a non-resident Senior Fellow for Governance Studies in the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Brookings Institution. Today, we're talking about research Mr. D'Souza is working on about how agencies incorporate cybersecurity into their strategic plans. Kevin, we spent most of the show so far just talking about your research around cybersecurity, the strategic plans that agencies are not including cybersecurity in. I want to just go a little more broad now. There's been a ton going on around cybersecurity, specifically over the last year, but really as we look back over the last decade in the federal space. And just recently, the president announced two major changes, a new Threat Integration Center for Cybersecurity, or Cyber Threat. He just signed an executive order that really focuses on information sharing. This is something that you've focused on as well in your research over the years. Just give me a sense. I mean, the fact that this is that the White House is really focusing on threat intelligence from a cybersecurity perspective and information sharing seems to indicate a different type of focus that's coming from the federal government. Give me your take on these two recent events.
A lot of the recent events obviously have to do with the attacks that came out of the Hollywood incident. And so what an executive order can do, and also having a threat integration center, is akin to what happened right after 9/11, right? And so you had this huge swirl of energy around trying to integrate information, trying to actually share information. And so through highly similar processes, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence came up, the Threat Coordination Center came up. And so I think these are important right steps. I think what is going to be absolutely critical is to not lose energy about this, because unlike threats when you are dealing with ISIS or even Al-Qaeda, that are in the news every day, right? So they remind individuals why we have DHS, why we have ODNI, why we have the TSA and everything else. They are very real. The threats these new agencies are going to deal with are very, very dark, and they don't get the right press coverage until there's a major event. And so to keep the public engaged and also reminded that this threat, while not as obvious, and it may not result in direct harm to individuals, is a critical issue. And so that's going to be very important. So the entire public relations office is going to have a challenge on their hand. The other thing is trying to get agencies to share information is always a challenge. And so how does the data fusion happen? And what are the protocols in place, especially when you try to bring in the private sector data? And how do you ensure that the data being provided is not compromised and is not used to actually penalize the private sector? And so trying to have those right protocols, those incentives in place, and the actual management of this is going to be a new undertaking. However, I think we have learned a lot from the experiences along with the ODNI.
The key piece to both of these is cyber information sharing, and that has been a major challenge for this administration and really the White House more generally, last administration too, to get the private sector on board. You did a little bit of research recently in the last couple of years around why the private sector will or won't or could or can't share information, threat information with the government. Talk a little bit about what your research found and how it relates back to this cyber issue, because I know you look more broadly than just cyber threat information.
When you get into the private sector, you have to deal with issues that encompass the entire globe. And so there are different laws and different regulations in place. So organizations like Google and others where they have large information infrastructures operate under very different rules depending on where they are. And so the exact analogy being is even though they are housed in the U.S., where do they pay their taxes and how many times information moves or even money moves? And so when you deal with trying to get them to share information at that global phase, it is not always easy because there is not always just one IT department. There are multiple IT departments. Each IT department may be, due to laws, due to EU regulation, may have different protocols to follow when it comes to privacy of data when it comes to actual disclosure. And then when you go to places that have less than ideal political and environmental considerations, then you actually have to deal with a place where rules are made up as you go along. And so if a threat originates anywhere, it may not impact the local offices in Washington, D.C. So does Google have the, or any other company, do they have the need to report it to the U.S. versus keep that quiet? Plus, the main thing with any of these threats is the calculus on how much are we going to lose if this information disclosure actually makes it out, right? So any number of major multinational companies have had attacks, have had threats, have had information espionage and things of that nature done to them. And many of them would rather just keep it quiet because the loss that they will get if that was discovered is much more higher than the actual loss of dealing with that one incident. And so how do you change the calculus in terms of ensuring that this information they share is not used to actually cause them more harm than the original attack?
Fascinating research, great conversation. That's all the time we have for today. My guest has been Kevin D'Souza, the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University and a non-resident senior fellow at Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. Kevin, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to us today.
Appreciate you interviewing me. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.